The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Happy Friday! You're listening to Feature Friday from The Pulse on CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy. On Feature Fridays, we dig deep into issues that shape the downtown Eastside and Vancouver. And today, we get into how the pandemic has affected youth in the downtown Eastside. We talk to youth and youth workers to figure out what young people are experiencing. All right, let's go.
She's kind of likes everything, but she's really been liking building blocks lately. She's really something. She's very curious.
Meet Elle and her 2.5-year-old daughter. Elle's not a real name. We changed it to protect her privacy. Elle lives in an apartment in the downtown Eastside with her daughter.
Before the pandemic, living like on the downtown Eastside was kind of hard enough because I have a 2.5-year-old, so taking her outside was like already kind of hard for me, taking her out of the area. But now with the pandemic going on, it's just like we're really freaked out, and because like no one really has places to go to social distance during the pandemic, I really haven't left my apartment very much. Well, she really just misses going outside and playing at the park and seeing her friends.
It's been a bumpy ride for Elle. She was a youth in the care of the Ministry of Children and Family Development, and at one point moved in with her daughter's dad. After that, things got rough.
I was living already in the downtown Eastside before I got my apartment, and I was living with my daughter's biological dad and his mom. And then things got not so great there, and I called my social worker, and I literally begged her to please get me out of there because I couldn't stay there with my baby. And she wanted to send me to a group home with my daughter, but I was like, I'm not going to go there. Couple days, I think I waited. And the night before I moved out, I found out that they got me an apartment. Yeah, I'd never seen my apartment before I signed my lease, nothing. I just needed to get out of where I was so bad that I just signed the lease.
Elle's only 20 years old, and already she's been through more adversity than most 20-year-olds in Canada have. Yet, she has a couple of things going for her, like housing, a responsive social worker, and financial support. And there are lots of youth who don't.
It's been tough. I found out a youth that had aged out of our services had recently passed away. We don't know the cause of death yet, but my guess is that it's likely overdose-related.
To get a sense of how youth on the street have been doing, I talked to this person.
I'm Matt. I'm a youth outreach worker from Watari.
Watari is a nonprofit based in the downtown Eastside. Matt told us that when the pandemic hit, many services like Matt's street outreach team, food services, community centers, and libraries had to close or move online. And that's a problem because youth relied on the in-person networks for connection and physical supports like food.
So a lot of folks aren't getting the resources they need or having a more difficult time getting those resources. So what we did a lot of is we were connecting with youth that we had contact information for via social media or phone numbers, stuff like that, right? And we would deliver stuff to them and meet up with them in an open space. A lot of folks lost any form of connection that they had with workers and with resources just because they weren't operating at full capacity or weren't operating at all. I mean, there was a lot of other outreach teams and other resources where workers were working from home and just operating through the use of, cell phones and laptops.
And Matt said something that blew me away. The majority of youth he works with don't have phones. I'm just going to pause here so that sinks in. I was blown away.
A lot of them don't have phones or they'll use burner phones or, cheap ones, and they'll either get lost or stolen, or they sell them, if they're able to get one. But a lot of folks, especially folks that are over the age of 19 who don't have access to a social worker, have a lot harder time having a cell phone or any way to communicate with any worker. That made issues for getting them food, made issues for getting them, addiction support and housing support as well. So a lot of them will use phones at community centers and stuff like that to get in touch with people, or computers at libraries to get on Facebook to send a message. And with those places being closed, it's created quite a barrier. And my guess is probably 70% of the youth that we work with don't have phones.
I talked to another youth worker who told me she sees the same lack of access to technology with the youth she works with.
My name is Kirsten Boucher. I'm a program manager with Directions Youth Services. In particular, I manage a program called Directions Youth Haven, which is a 5-bed, low-barrier emergency safe house for young people.
You'll hear clips back and forth from Matt and Kirsten.
You know, in a typical year, usually we have about 25,000 visits to our drop-in center. And sometimes that is to access phone, computer.
Kirsten guesses that, same as Matt, about 70% of the youth she works with don't have phones either. And that lack of technology combined with closure of services hit youth hard.
What we really saw was an increase in depression and anxiety among youth who were really missing that face-to-face contact with needed supports. And of course, anywhere from kind of that social connection to also the practical supports in terms of access to food, income, all of those pieces. You know, a lot of the time that's where, you know, youth street families are super important to them. And they're going out and trying to find those people and make sure that they're safe and try to connect with them.
One question I was curious about was how many youth are there homeless in the Downtown East Side? Turns out that question is hard to answer. The City of Vancouver conducts a homeless count every year, and that's a tough exercise. And advocates say the official count is likely an undercount. This year, the preliminary results are out, and even in the report, it says the numbers represent a minimum of the true number of homeless on our streets. The preliminary results found that there are 3,634 people who are homeless in Metro Vancouver, and just under 200 of them are under the age of 24. That's young. But Matt and Kirsten say the real number is probably much higher. Here's Matt.
The number of homeless youth within this province and within this city, there's a lot of them. And when it comes to the homeless count and stuff like that, a lot of these folks get missed because they're precariously housed and they're, you know, staying at a friend's house or a couch somewhere. They don't get counted. So the housing availability and what it currently exists for youth housing is nowhere close to enough than what's needed.
And Kirsten shares the same sentiment.
I think that number is always changing and evolving. I know that, you know, in terms of the numbers that we see, we serve over 1,000 youth each year, access somewhere safe to sleep for the night. I know that, you know, youth are hanging out in different areas and that's changing all the time. You know, there's some youth who are tenting and being displaced out in the community that way. But in Vancouver, it is a very high number. And, you know, we certainly do our part to help participate in the homeless count that's run through the city every year. And, you know, those numbers are always varying. And I think there's always some youth that aren't quite captured. In talking with the youth, there were certainly quite a few youth who lost their housing over the last little bit with COVID, whether it was due to changes in kind of dynamic or no longer being able to stay sort of couch surfing with friends and family anymore. Which I think is sort of the tip of the iceberg is sort of what we see in terms of youth on the street. But we certainly know there's a lot more youth who are unstably and unsafely housed between couch surfing and different environments that way. And I think we certainly see that during times like this.
That's a huge number she put out there. 700 to 1,000 youth every year access an organization's programs. And there are other organizations that youth may go to as well. So the true total may be even higher than that.
Certainly there are youth that, you know, gather, you know, on the Downtown East Side. There's, you know, youth in Oppenheimer Park. There's youth accessing shelter. So whether that's our shelter, whether that's other shelters in the community, there's youth who are doing a lot of the couch surfing and unstably housed. So youth might move through that. So they might be stably housed for a while and sometimes things fall through and then they're back in the situation where they're on the streets again. So I think it really does vary. And that's sometimes part of the issue about why it's not always seen. It's not always for obvious to folks out in community that, you know, the youth that you just walked past might actually be homeless.
Come September, the picture may get even worse. On September the 1st, BC's ban on evictions will end, which means more tenants may lose their housing. And with that, it seems likely that we'll see more youth on the street. Either they're evicted or people they were couch surfing with are evicted. As well, we may see some youth transitioning out of the foster care system and onto the street. September 31st marks the end of emergency measures in the foster care systems. At that date, youth in foster care who turned 19 in the summer will age out of care and lose their ministry-provided housing. Some of those youth may become homeless. And on top of all of that, employment continues to be tough to find. Matt says that the youth he works with who are looking for jobs have had very little luck getting calls back. For many of us who are housed, the pandemic seems to have changed our lives completely. But for those on the street, the challenges were already so large that things seem more or less the same.
It's kind of stayed exactly the way it always has been, right? Aside from resources not being open, the way that folks are on the street, not much has changed. You see very little PPE. There are folks wearing it, and I won't detract from that, but there's still very much a lack of physical distancing, and it very much feels like business as usual.
Here's Kirsten.
We're in the middle of a housing crisis. There is not access to safe, affordable, stable housing for young people. The other issue, of course, is a toxic drug supply. So we are losing many youth to the opiate poisoning crisis. You know, June was, of course, the highest number on record in terms of overdoses per month. And these are the issues that are impacting our youth every day. They're impacting the youth that we see. They're impacting the staff working with youth. It's certainly exacerbated the issue. It's certainly highlighted where those gaps are. And I think, you know, certainly has contributed to further isolating or marginalizing folks. And we were already in the middle of two very significant crises in our community here in Vancouver and on the downtown east side in terms of housing and opiate poisoning. So those issues are not new, but are certainly exacerbated by the current situation. And hopefully maybe this will be an opportunity for individuals who maybe weren't aware of that before to take note and listen to that part of the conversation, because it's an important conversation. There's a lot of youth out there who desperately need that support and need all of us to pay attention to what's going on for them.
I asked Matt what would make a difference for youth. He was pretty emphatic.
Housing and connection with people. I think that there needs to be like a youth hub in the downtown east side. There isn't. A place where folks, I mean, the vast majority of people that work in youth services, our age mandate is 24 and under, right? And, you know, there's one, you know, Covenant House has a drop-in. They're up in, you know, the West End. Yale Town area. Directions Youth Services is really the only 24-hour hub where youth can kind of drop in and access services, and there needs to be something like that down here. And I feel like that's something that's sorely missing. The experiences that folks 24 and under are experiencing are very different than, you know, folks in their 40s or 50s, right? And the reasons for youth homelessness are different than the reasons for adult homelessness. And a lot of that has to do with family disruption, whether that's a divorce or a parent that uses or a death in the family. That's a big reason why youth end up homeless and end up on the streets or in shelters or care before, you know, their 19th birthday. Now that's very different than someone that, you know, has fallen into addiction or has lost a job and lost their housing, right? So the reasoning for youth homelessness is different than, for the most part, than the reasoning for adult homelessness. So I think it's important to have people that understand, you know, how to do youth work versus people that know how to do social services work and people that, you know, have a specific focus and a specific mandate and really try and help these kids and give them another space to access services. Because, I mean, to go to a place like Directions at Covenant House, if you don't have access to public transit or bus tickets or something like that, it's quite a bit of a trek.
For Kirsten, the responsibility and opportunity to make a difference for youth also lies with individual members of community.
One of the opportunities that have come from the COVID pandemic is for that to be seen by others and thought about. So it has been, you know, really great seeing those conversations being had with Dr. Bonnie Henry and Premier Horgan about the need for safe supply in terms of our substance use. So I think wherever possible, get curious, educate yourself on the current climate and the different opportunities that might be available to help. Pay attention when that stuff's happening in the news and the media. You know, when Vancouver City Council is talking about those issues, when politicians are talking about those issues, think about that and think about how that might weigh in terms of your vote and what you can do to support. I think on a practical level, all of our, you know, programs in youth homelessness could always use some support. Whether that's financial, whether that's in-kind donation, whether that's volunteers, we are always looking for support. We do great work and we can't do it alone. So it really does take a community. And if anyone is able to offer what they can, donations as large or as small, everything goes a long way to help our young people and making sure that they have access to the support and the supplies that they need.
Let's go back to Elle, the 20-year-old single mom we met at the start of the episode. Side note, I gotta add that Elle is way more mature than I was at 20. And in many ways, Elle is on her way to being pretty stable. It wasn't easy for her, I imagine, and it still isn't. She's a former youth in care, still lives in the neighborhood, and she has a young daughter to care for. But she has secure housing, is going back to school, and she has plans to move out of the downtown east side. I asked her what her dream was. What she wants life to look like for herself in 10 years.
I'd love to be working with not kids, but teenagers. I'd really, really, really love to be working in an alternative school, being like a youth and family worker. I'd really love that. I'd love for my daughter to be in school and taking up some sort of instrument and dance. That's my dream for her. And I kind of want to have like another kid, but I don't know how that's going to go. So... And I want to be, hopefully by then, in my home, my, like, forever home. I don't want to move around anymore. I mean, just want to, like, get comfortable and, like, settled in with my daughter and not have to worry about, like, money or groceries or, like, anything like that. That's, like, my dream. And I've lived in the city my whole life and I haven't traveled at all. I mean, I guess I can add that in there within the next 10 years. I would love to travel also. And then, like, I would like to think my forever home is in Vancouver because I do have family in Vancouver and that's my daughter's family. But if we end up somewhere else, then we end up somewhere else. I just hope it's beautiful and big.
And that's it for today's Feature Friday. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. The music was by Ear Deer. You heard Slumber Foam and Epichanchilada, both downloaded from freesound.org. I'm Tan Macy. Take care and have a lovely Friday.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.